You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the Kid Counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, we are moving into a new series. Last year, we did a summer school series, and it was met with very positive feedback. That was a huge hit of a series. So we are going to do another summer series this year. This year is called Art of the Session. Yes, that's a play on Art of the Relationship for those of you that caught that. So this series is going to be about all things related to what needs to be for sessions to take place. And here's why we're talking about this. I've mentioned before the CCPT skills pyramid, and I went through the four levels. So you have the clinical skills at the bottom. And if you think about the pyramid, obviously it's going to come to an apex, yes? So really big at the bottom are the clinical skills. Then there's applied skills next. Then there's refined skills. And then there's insight skills. And I briefly touched on all of those, and I've spoken about those in different workshops. But we've spent a lot of time doing all of the clinical skills. And I want to start moving in the direction of the application of some of these clinical skills. Because first of all, there's always new listeners. Second of all, for those of you that have been around the block with me so many times, it is always helpful to have a refresher of some of the things that we've already learned. And I want this to be a summer series where we can take what we know clinically and actually make sure that we're practically applying it. And what I'm seeing over and over, especially in some of the play sessions that I'm watching, what I'm noticing is people that are very grounded in clinical skills are missing some of the application, either because it's never been discussed, they've never been trained in it, it's not been made clear. So that's what this summer series is about. Art of the session. What do we need to really make sure that our sessions are the best that they can be? So let's talk about the playroom. I know that not everyone has their dream playroom. In fact, I would argue most CCPTs do not have their dream playroom. And I also am aware that often we are relegated to whatever spare closet, janitorial room, storage space, conference room, library. I've heard it all, y'all. You would not believe where CCPTs all over this world are trying to conduct play sessions. I know that often the environment is not ideal. I know it is not necessarily the way that we would choose. However, I want us to at least know what it needs to be to the most that we're able to get there. It may not be perfect. It may not be fully the way that it is recommended, but we need to do everything we can to know what a playroom should look like, how it should be set up, what it needs to include, and the purpose behind all of these expectations. So first and foremost, the ideal playroom per Landreth is about 12 by 15. That is big enough for the child to have room to play, but small enough that it doesn't feel like this massive vacant space that isn't contained. So anything smaller than that could be a little bit difficult for a child to have freedom to do active play. Anything bigger than that, it feels like there's just too much room and it's not necessarily safe and cocoon-like enough. So 12 by 15 around that dimension is ideal. We also need to be mindful that when we are setting up our playroom, regardless of where it is, regardless of the space, the intention is that it is neutral. And what I mean by that is we want it to be a space where every child can make it his or her own. If we paint bold colors on a wall, if we paint murals on a wall, if we have phrases on a wall, if we have posters on a wall, if we have artwork on a wall, if we have anything on a wall, that is no longer neutral. So the purpose of setting up your playroom is not to decorate it. It's not to make it look like kids belong there. It's not to have giraffes and hippos and elephants, nor is it to have blocks, ABC blocks on the wall, nor is it to have little sayings, you know, I know all the places that you'll go, Dr. Seuss, whatever. The goal is complete neutrality. We want neutral paint. We want neutral walls with nothing on them. Why? Because the child needs to feel that it can be what they need or want it to be. This brings me to, we also do not have anything that a child makes displayed in the playroom. If they make art projects, if they paint, if they color, if they draw, if they make paper airplanes, if they make origami, if they make garlands, if they make snowflakes, if they make pipe cleaner creations, if they make pom-pom towers, whatever, they are not displayed or kept in a playroom. Why? Because the next child that comes in, it's no longer neutral. And the premise of this is, Landreth talks about this, that would be like putting psychotherapy notes up on a wall. There's confidentiality in what a child makes in a playroom. That is just between you and the child. And so even if they ask to keep it with you, you can keep it, but it should not remain in the playroom. And I've seen so many playrooms where there are like essentially clotheslines strung up across the walls, and there's 900 pieces of artwork clothespinned across these clotheslines. And then there's stuff on the windows, and there's stuff on the shelves, and there's stuff that kids have made. That is no longer CCPT. So we need to be very intentional about the neutrality of the playroom, because that's the whole premise, that the child comes in and every single child feels at home there. You realize if you paint polka dots on your wall, not every kid is going to like that. You paint stripes on your wall, not every kid's going to like that. You paint your walls purple, not every kid is going to like that. The goal is blank neutrality, and therefore every child can feel comfortable in their playroom. You do realize that every time a child walks in your playroom, it feels like it's theirs and only theirs. Yes, they know other kids come. They know other kids play with you. But it feels like theirs for that hour, as it should. It doesn't when there's a whole bunch of stuff from other kids, and there's a whole bunch of artwork on the walls, and there's a whole bunch of crafts on display. Now that feels like a whole bunch of other people's playroom. So that's a really important piece. Also, there needs to be a rug on the floor in a playroom. It needs to be clear that there is a boundary for where play can take place. It doesn't matter what kind of flooring you have, whether it's carpet or hardwood or linoleum or laminate or whatever. It doesn't matter. You have a rug on the floor, and that makes it clear that that is a play area boundary. It's also comfortable. Kids spend a lot of time on playroom floors, so if you have a rug in there that's comfortable on their knees, on their hands, when they lay down, when they crouch, when they do all the things that they do, there's a comfort factor. But it's very clear that there's a visual space for where play can happen. Now, it can take place off of the rug too, but that just gives that defining visual boundary for a play area. Also, many of you have sand trays in your room. In true CCPT fashion, it is a sandbox. We haven't talked about this. I want to make this really clear. It doesn't matter whether it's on a stand and it's higher, or if it's on the ground, if we are treating it as a CCPT tool. If we are using a sand tray from any other theoretical model, meaning if we have Jungian sand tray background, if we have Adlerian sand play background, if we have any kind of directive or prescriptive background in sand work, that should not be brought into a CCPT playroom. In the full and pure CCPT model, there's a sandbox on the floor. Therefore, kids can get in it, they can play in it, they can put toys in it. So it serves the same purpose, whether it's on a stand or on the floor. but there is no expectation of how the sand is to be used. They're not given prompts. They're not told to name their world. They're not told to choose figures that represent their family members. They're not asked to describe what's happening in the world. It's a tool and a toy, just like anything else in a CCPT playroom. They can choose to play in the sand or not. They can choose to put toys and miniatures in the sand or not. But most of the CCPT playrooms at their purest form will have a box on the floor. You could certainly put a sand tray on the floor and it would serve the same purpose. It would just not be as big. But that needs to be made clear as well, because often people will try to incorporate, quote, sand play into a CCPT playroom, and that is anti-theoretical. It's just like anything else in the room. The child can choose to play with it or not. So I want to make that really clear. Also, the setup of your toys. There is purpose and intention in the way you lay out your playroom. Ideally, you have a U-shaped configuration so that each wall has a category of toys on it. If you're not familiar with the three categories of toys, this is why we're talking about this. We have acting out aggressive toys, we have real life toys, and we have creative artistic expressive toys. So if you walk into the room, theoretically, you're going to have your acting out aggressive toys on the left wall, your real life toys on the middle wall, and your creative artistic expressive toys on your right wall. That creates your you. And what this does is it makes sense to a child's brain that all of the acting out aggressive toys are over here, and all of the real life toys are over here, and all of the creative artistic toys are over here. If you have handcuffs next to baby dolls, next to markers, next to puppets, next to swords, next to tigers and hollow sharks, next to deer and baby chickens, that subconsciously is overwhelming and confusing for a child. And so we want to make sure that the toys are grouped intentionally so that it makes sense. Now, depending on the footprint of your items, depending on the size of your items, depending on where there are doors and windows and other things in your room, it's not always possible to fully have those categories exclusively grouped together. So for example, you might have to have, based on the size of it, you might have to have your puppet theater in one corner of the room. And that may be kind of where the aggressive toys are on that wall. If there's only one spot for the puppet theater to go, the puppet theater goes where it has to go. But as much as possible, you want to make sure that your toys are grouped according to category and they function in that U configuration. Also, you want to make sure that once your toys are set up, there's consistency and predictability with where they are when kids come into the playroom. So if you have your army cubby, for example, and you have all of your army related stuff in the second cubby from the floor all the way to the left, that's where your army stuff needs to be every single week. If you have your police stuff right next to that, you want to have all of your police stuff in that same cubby every single week. They don't have to be in exactly the same spot in the cubby, but kids need to be able to expect where the toys that they want to play with are going to be. This is another reason for the U configuration, because you learn really quickly, okay, all that aggressive stuff goes over there, all that real life stuff goes there, all that creative artistic stuff goes there. It's very easy to pick up your playroom when they're grouped according to category. And then it becomes predictable for the child. Which brings me to, this is a huge piece of your playroom and the session. You want to be consistent. You want to be stable. You want to be predictable. The playroom is going to look almost the same every single time. You're going to say the same things every time. It's going to be laid out the same way every time. We don't introduce and change stuff in the playroom for this very reason, because kids need and want and crave the predictability that the playroom affords them. So we're always trying to make sure that it is as static as possible. Now, do things get moved? Do things get hidden? Do things get put back in different spots that we don't realize right away? Yes, of course. But again, as much as we are able, we are trying to make sure that it's predictable and consistent for our kids. And another note about the toys, they need to be inviting, which means they're not in packaging. They're not still unwrapped. They don't have tags on them. They don't have the cellophane from the store. They're inviting, which means they're ready to be used. They are visible, which means they're easily seen. And they are accessible, meaning they're within reach. You don't want stuff super high up where a kid can't reach it. You don't want shelving units that are so tall that you are forced to get something for a child and or they can't even see what's up there. You don't want things in bins. You don't want things in cupboards. You don't want things in baskets. You don't want things behind doors or drawers. As much as possible, you want them accessible, visible, and inviting. A child needs to be able to access the things that they need or want to play with. It is prohibitive if they have to rummage through bins, if they have to dig through boxes, if they have to open stuff up to find stuff, if it's too high for them to even reach or see it. Now, all of a sudden, there are barriers to their play. And therefore, we want to make sure that as much as possible, everything is within reach and ready to be used. And then finally, another thought about toys. You need to have your playroom set up and the toys within your playroom where it allows you to be permissive. In other words, you don't want stuff in your room that costs a lot of money. You don't want stuff in your room that you have an emotional attachment to. And you don't want stuff in your room that you have to constantly be worried about or try to protect. So if you are in an environment where there's all kinds of stuff that requires a lot of limits, see if you can find a different space. Because the premise of a CCPT playroom is there's freedom, there's autonomy, there's permissiveness. Do not buy a $300 dollhouse if that $300 is going to make you want to die inside every time a kid wants to throw it to the ground or stomp on it or hit it with a sword or whatever. If you're thinking, oh my gosh, don't break my $300 dollhouse every time a kid goes to play with it, you shouldn't have bought a $300 dollhouse. Now, look, dollhouses are not cheap. I get it. If you spend $300 on a dollhouse, you have to be okay with the fact that it might get ruined. Do not bring expensive stuff into the playroom that you feel compelled to protect. Don't have stuff that you have to constantly be worried about in your playroom. This is going to require either you can no longer accept the child's behavior and or you have to set too many limits. And that all of a sudden now is going to get in the way and be a barrier to the work that the child needs to do. So that is my go-to list of all things you need to know related to setting up your playroom and maintaining your playroom so that it can be the most helpful and therapeutic environment that it can be for our kids. So I hope that that is helpful. As we go through this summer series, Art of the Session, we're going to be tackling all kinds of things, and it's really going to hopefully equip you to make sure that everything about your session from the start to the end, from the first session to the last, everything about it, you know that you have intentional choices that you've made that are adherent to the model so that it supports you in your work. All right. If you want to reach out to me, I would love to hear from you, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. If you'd want to ask a question, please email me and I'll be happy to cover it on an episode. I love y'all. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep serving kids. Keep serving families. Keep working to be adherent to CCPT. It is incredible seeing what is going on. Oh my gosh, speaking of which, I just got an email today. Here's a little pep talk, make you feel good before we end for the day. I just got an email from Tracy in New Zealand. New Zealand just launched a new play therapy association, and it is wholly CCPT. So I just went on the website, I checked it out, and New Zealand now has launched an association for play therapy that is 100% CCPT in theoretical orientation. So kia ora to all of my Kiwis and all of my people on the other side of the world. I'm so excited for you all. And what an incredible moment of celebration for our field, for your country, for our kids. This is what we need more of in the world. People that get it, associations that support it, and the training that we all need and want. So really excited for New Zealand. Tracy, thank you for emailing and letting me know that. And this is what we're working toward, y'all. One step at a time. We want to see changes like this take place across the world. Love y'all. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.